Now, before CR-4101 comes into conduction, it will have lifted the collectors of those transistors. That step could couple through C-4104 over to the output from the IC and cause some damage, so CR-4110 clamps at plus 15 volts to protect the IC. Now, that just leaves CR-4112, and that keeps the output from the IC from going below ground in case we lose the 150-volt supply. I guess I neglected to mention that the high-frequency path for rapid changes in cathode current is through C-4106 and to drive the base of Q-4105. So for fast changes, those two transistors form a complementary NPN-PNP pair. Now C-4104 and R-4104 form some negative feedback to slow down the reaction of Q-4115 so that Q-4105 can take over. The times 14 multiplier is a package unit made especially for us. It uses the 3000 volt peak-to-peak output from T4201 there at pin 7, and the output is, as I said earlier, 21 kV. Now, the unique feature of this multiplier is the fact that the current return comes out as the beam limit sense. Now, that current comes down the margin a ways where it says beam limit sense in at the base of Q4145, but flows through R4142. Now, we'll use that for intensity limiting, as we'll see later. Now, the multiplier uses 14 diodes in the multiplier. And in addition, there's a diode between the beam limit sense output and ground so that that point can't go below ground in case that line is opened, if someone pulls a cable, for example. Now, there's a 10 meg resistor in series with a 21 kV output in case that point gets shorted to ground at current limits. Well, let's look next at the Z-axis circuit. First, the inputs. Let's begin down at the lower left-hand corner in the margin. The second input up where it says Z-axis from J2014. Now that comes from the logic circuit. Now that includes unblanking, intensification during the intensified mode of operation, external Z-axis, and then the output from the A and B intensity controls. Now, there are actually four intensity controls on this instrument. The one which controls the intensity of the A time base, one for the B time base, then a master intensity control, and that's the one that's found just above the Z-axis input here, which controls the intensity of both A and B, and then there's readout intensity. We'll talk about that later. Now, the bottom input, which is labeled Z-axis inhibit, comes from the readout board, and it's used to turn off the Z-axis information at the time that the character is being written so that the readout Z-axis information can be supplied. Now, just up above the intensity limit, it comes from both A and B time-based units. One, there's a ground if either of the instruments is in the amplifier mode or if you have a vertical amplifier placed in one of the horizontal compartments. Now, that limits the intensity in XY mode so that you don't burn the CRT. Then, if either of the plug-ins is in the slower sweep speed positions, 0.1 second to 5 seconds, the intensity is limited once again by a ground closure at that point. Now, that intensity limit is connected to both of the plug-ins in parallel, so that if one plug-in is in the amplifier mode and the other one in time-based mode, you still have the intensity limit. The same thing is true with the slow sweep speed inhibit. Okay, the next input, beam limit sense. Now, that's tied up to the output there in the times 14 multiplier. Now, it senses beam current and goes low whenever beam current is present. The next input up above, Z-axis readout, and provides the Z-axis for writing the character in the knob readout feature of the instrument. Well, let's look just briefly at the operational amplifier composed of Q4197, Q4193, Q4113, 14, and 15. Now, it is an operational amplifier. The input to the amp is a base of Q4197. That transistor and Q4193, as you can see, is a common emitter amplifier. The signal is taken from the collector of Q4193 to drive into the base of Q4115. Now that's a collector-loaded amplifier, and the output from the amp, the feedback takes off from that point too. The resistor is R4109. Now the collector load for Q4115 is the constant current supply supplied by Q4113 and Q4114 in shunt with R4115, in shunt, of course, with the feedback resistor. The drive into the base of Q4115 is negative going at the time that we want to form the unblanking gate. At that time, as you can see, Q4115 is conducting less. Now, for fast information for that step, we couple through C4107 into the base of Q4113. Now we turn that transistor on harder, which in turn turns on Q4114 harder and pulls up on the collector and the output to the operational amplifier. Now that information is fed back through the feedback resistor to the input to the operational amplifier. Now that feedback circuit then maintains linearity where we have two amplifiers working, the slow path or DC path through Q4115 and the faster path through Q4113. We'll talk about more details around that operational amplifier in a moment, but let's look again at the input. Now the Z-axis comes into the emitters of Q4163 and Q4175. Well, that's a comparator configuration. Now normally the base of Q4175 sets at 6.2 volts. Clamped by CR4177 and Zener VR4173. Now the Z-axis current flows through Q4175 and through Q4163, and the ratio of current depends upon the intensity control. Now maximum on the intensity control is down toward the ground end of the control. Under that condition, Q4163 would be turned off and all of the current would flow through Q4175 to the operational amplifier. Now, maximum current there is about 4 mils, which equals 60 or 65 volts at the output from the Z-axis amplifier. Now, as you turn counterclockwise on the master intensity control, that would be up in this diagram, Q4163 would conduct more, Q4175 would conduct less, and less of the Z-axis current flows to the Z-axis amplifier for less intensity. Now when the Z-axis inhibit waveform comes along, now that's a negative going 6-volt peak-to-peak waveform at the time that we want to write a character. We pull down on the base of Q4177. That emitter follows it down, drops the base of Q4175, removes all Z-axis current from the Z-axis amplifier. Now, prior to the arrival of the Z-axis inhibit pulse, the emitter of Q4177 is sitting at 6.2 volts, clamped by CR4177. The base is at the same potential, clamped by CR4175. That was the pull-up to plus 15 volts through R4177. So Q4177 is off prior to the arrival of the Z-axis inhibit waveform. Now when that waveform arrives and Q4177 turns on, pulling down on the base of Q4175, then CR4171 catches the base of Q4163, Following that base at 6.2 volts, its emitter is one junction below that. That in turn would hold the emitter of Q4175 such that you can turn that transistor off with the Z-axis inhibit waveform. All right, let's look at the intensity limit circuits. Well, first, we'll limit whenever either of the time bases is in the amplifier mode, or if you have a vertical plug-in in one of the time bases. Under that condition, the base of Q4159 will be pulled down to ground. If either of the time bases is in the slow sweep speeds of 0.1 second to 5 seconds, then the base of Q4159 will be pulled down to ground and limits the intensity to keep from damaging the CRT. Then at any sweep speed, if the Z-axis current gets above about 2.25 mils, now that represents about 37 volts at the output from the Z-axis amplifier, then limiting will begin to occur, providing that the beam sense at the output from the times 14 multiplier indicates that beam current electrons are being received by the post-accelerating anode. Let's consider now why we need the beam sense input into this limiting circuit. Now, if we can limit by the amount of Z-axis current, then why do we care what the post-accelerating anode sees in the way of beam current? Well, the answer is in the 10 millisecond delay in the reaction of the beam sense circuit. Now, that's propagation time around the loop. That is, the post-accelerating anode receives the beam current electrons. We get an output from the times 14 multiplier, which in turn then must pass through a delay network composed of C4140, L4140, and C4142 before it reaches the base of Q4145. Now, in measurements requiring repetitive signals, even at very fast sweep speeds, the beam sense enables the limiting circuit. However, for a very fast single sweep operation within the 10 millisecond delay time, the limiting circuit is not enabled and the CRT works full bore, so to speak. Well, let's look first at the beam sense circuit. Now, the beam current electrons received at the post-accelerating anode pass through the times 14 multiplier down in at J4120 and flows through R4142. And the voltage drop across that resistor sets the base level at Q4145. Now, let's establish a condition first in the absence of beam current. Let's begin at the emitter of Q4151. The cathode of CR4151 sets at plus 15 volts. The emitter of that transistor then would be at 15.6. We're down a junction to the base of that transistor, 15 volts. Well, you'll notice that in the absence of beam current, the base of Q4145 is pulled up to plus 15 volts. So that transistor is off. We have no base current for Q4151, and that transistor is off. Now, just as soon as beam current is received, we begin to pull down on the base of Q4145, turn that transistor on, which in turn turns on Q4151, and that supplies emitter current for Q4159 and collector current for Q4185. Now, at normal sweep speeds, that is, other than the very slowest sweep speeds, and other than in the amplifier mode of one of the plug-ins, the base of Q4159 is pulled up to plus 15 volts. That transistor is off. There's no collector current for Q4183. The only transistor enabled is Q4185. Now, as the Z-axis current exceeds about 2.25 mils, we'll get enough voltage drop across R4185 to turn on Q4185. Some of the Z-axis current is siphoned off through that transistor and through Q4151 up above. Now, the amount of current that is siphoned off depends somewhat upon how hard Q4151 is conducting, and that's a function of the beam sense. Now, with a very fast single sweep measurement, then Q4145 and Q4151 wouldn't have time to turn on. Remember the 10 millisecond delay. Q4185 wouldn't have any collector current, and it couldn't siphon off any current. All of the Z-axis current flows into the Z-axis amplifier to provide unblanking. Now let's look at the intensity limit. We said that that would be a ground in case we're in the amplifier mode or one of the slower sweep speeds, which turns on Q4159 and supplies collector current for Q4183. Now, only 1 mil or so of Z-axis current flowing through R4183 will turn on Q4183 and siphon some of the current off through that transistor through Q4159 through Q4151 up above, thereby limiting the Z-axis drive in the amplifier mode and in the slower sweep speeds. Well, let's look at some of the protective diodes. CR4150 protects the base emitter junction of Q4151 in case Q4145 is pulled out of the socket when the instrument is hot. CR4151, as we said earlier, clamps the emitter of that transistor at 15.6 volts. However, if you draw way too much current through Q4151 by having excessive beam current, then that diode would disconnect and we have current limiting through R4151. Now, CR4145 solves a rather unusual problem that occurs if you lose the plus 15 volt supply momentarily. Now, let's go over to the common emitter stage, Q4197 and Q4193. If we lose the plus 15 volt supply, we've lost the emitter supply there. The collector then drops toward a minus 15 volts, which turns off Q4115. Q4113 and Q4114 are conducting hard, 10 mils or so, which pulls the output from the Z-axis amplifier up to about 100 volts. Now, the DC restorer circuit, as we'll see later, won't follow quite that far. However, we do zero bias the CRT. The CRT lights up like a searchlight. We get lots of beam current. All right, that beam current in at the beam sense pulls the base of Q4145 down to ground. Now, that requires only 50 microamps in order to do that, you see, flowing through R4142. Now, watch this path closely. We said that the base of Q4145 was pulled down to ground, which pulls down on the emitter of that transistor. Now, since the collector is at ground, that means that transistor is saturated, probably not more than 100 millivolts or so of emitter drop there. That pulls down on the base of Q4151. D4151 will have disconnected, or current limited then, through R4151. That's about 5 mils, I guess. Now, that transistor saturates, and the base collector junction becomes forward biased. You might want to just sketch in a little arrow there on that collector to show that we have a forward biased base collector junction. Now, that in turn pulls down on the collector of Q4185. There we have another forward biased collector base junction. Notice that's an NPN. So all three of those transistors are saturated. Now let's return the plus 15 volt supply. This was just a momentary short then. All right, with 50 microamps flowing, Then we're still holding down on the base of Q4145. Q4151 is still saturated. Now we're trying to pull up on the base of Q4185 in through the feedback resistor R4109 to that plus 100 volts or so that's still being maintained at the output from the Z-axis circuit. Well, that pulls about, 6 mils or so through Q4185's collector base junction through R4153. Well, that's about a 6-volt drop right there. But it keeps all three of those transistors saturated. You see, as long as we have the 100 volts at the output from the Z-axis circuit, we're still drawing in excess of 50 microamps of beam current, which in turn holds down on the base of Q4145. Now, through that path that we just mentioned then, it holds down on the base of Q4197, holding that transistor on, which in turn holds Q4193 off, and we're locked up with high beam current through the CRT. All right, back to CR4145. Now, we said that the base of Q4197 will have been pulled up to about 6.5 or 7 volts by the feedback resistor. That then would lift through CR4145, lift the base of Q4145. Now that transistor goes out of saturation. Its emitter follows it up, which now biases Q4151 to less conduction. It comes out of saturation. Then lifts the collector of Q4185. It comes out of saturation. Just as soon as the base of Q4197 gets up to about 7.5 volts or so, we're back to normal operation. Okay, let's see if we've missed anything. That delay network off the base of Q4145, composed of C4140, L4140, and C4142, also acts as a filter to keep the 26 kilohertz information out of the Z-axis circuit. Now notice that when the Z-axis inhibit has removed the normal Z-axis drive, then we get Z-axis readout through grounded base transistor Q4135, which flows into the input of the operational amplifier there at the base of Q4197. Maximum current there is about 3 mils during readout. Notice the divider composed of R4137 and R4193, which conveniently sets the bases of both Q4135 and Q4193. Well, let's look a little more closely at the operational amplifier. Notice the Z-axis peaking adjustment in the collector of Q4197. By increasing and decreasing the value of a collector load resistor in that transistor, we change the Miller capacitance and thereby change the frequency response of the amplifier. CR4195 protects the base emitter junction of Q4197 in case Q4135 is pulled out of the socket when the instrument is hot. You see, that would pull the base of that transistor up to 50 volts. Okay, there's a biasing network composed of CR4110, CR4111, and Zener, VR4111, which sets the bias level at the base of Q4114 and also at Q4113. Now, since the base of that transistor is two junctions below 100 volts and the emitter is one junction below 100 volts, then we have a forced 600 millivolts across R4113 and a constant current supply. Now, the reason for the cascode configuration in Q4113 and Q4114 is to provide a lower capacitance drive into the base of Q4113. See, since the collector of that transistor drives into the low impedance emitter of Q4114, then the collector doesn't move. If it doesn't move, then it doesn't reflect Miller capacitance to the base of Q4113. Now, the termination of the unblanking gate will tend to cause Q4113 to draw less current. Now, we can speed things up by coupling that step through C4105 to the base of Q4115. Turn that transistor on hard during the trailing edge of the unblanking waveform and improving the fall time of the unblanking waveform. CR4103 protects the base emitter junction of Q4115 in case Q4193 is pulled out of the socket. The base of that transistor, you see, would head towards the minus 15 volts. All right, the output from this Z-axis amplifier, with a swing from about 5 volts or so with minimum intensity up to 60 or so with maximum intensity, with no limiting, that is, goes into the DC restorer circuit, which provides the grid bias for the CRT. Now let's talk about the operation of the DC restorer. First, we pick off a 800 volt peak-to-peak sine wave from pin 6 of T4201, feed it down through R4217, and we're going to limit the positive and negative excursions of that sine wave. Limit the positive excursion by CR4217 and the negative excursion by CR4218. Now, CR4217 will come into conduction at about 100 volts. That's the sine center for the grid bias control. CR4218 comes into conduction with a negative excursion at whatever the output from the Z-axis amplifier happened to be at the time. Now, it'll help in your understanding of this circuit if you'll draw a series of rectangular waveforms, I'll say a couple of inches high and maybe a half inch wide, and let that represent the clipped sine wave. All right, the positive excursion of this series of pulses will be at 100 volts, set by the grid bias control. The negative excursion, well, let's make that 10 volts. Makes it easier for us. All right, draw two or three cycles. Then lift the negative excursion up to, say, 40 volts for two or three cycles, then return the negative excursion to plus 10 volts. Now, the negative excursion of those rectangular pulses is the output from the Z-axis amplifier. And the way we've drawn it illustrates unblanking. Now, the CRT grid voltage, the output from this DC restorer circuit, will be negative with respect to the cathode, of course, by an amount equal to the amplitude of these rectangular pulses. All right, it would start then at a minus 90 volts, the difference between 10 volts and 100 volts. Then step up to a minus 60 volts. That's during unblanking. And at the end of unblanking, drop back down to a minus 90 volts. The output to the CRT grid is effectively a DC-coupled unblanking waveform. All right, let's see if we can make the DC restorer work. Let's begin with a positive excursion. Now, the positive excursion then lifts the left side of C4215. The right side is clamped by CR4215 at the cathode level, so that capacitor takes on a charge, referring to the waveforms we just drew, would be 90 volts in amplitude in addition to the 3 kV that was on there initially. Now, as the negative excursion arrives, it drops the left side of C4215. That negative step then couples through the capacitor, turns off CR4215, turns on CR4216, and dumps the charge into C4216. That capacitor then takes on that 90 volt charge in addition to the 3 kV. All right, with the arrival of the next positive excursion, CR4215 clamps the right side of C4215. It takes on another charge to be dumped through CR4216 into C-4216 with the arrival of the next negative excursion. The net result, as I said earlier, is a negative going voltage, negative with respect to the cathode, which is applied to the grid, which is equal in amplitude to those clipped rectangular waveforms. Now, since the bias requirements differ with different CRTs, we need the grid bias adjustment to compensate. Now, fast unblanking information will couple through C4219 to the CRT grid. Notice the two neons, DS4216 and 4218, between the grid and cathodes to prevent arc over in case the grid and cathode supplies don't come up to potential at the same time.